Inoho, please be seated.
Morning. Anything morning. Arising overnight?
No, thank you, Your Honour.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Page. We're in your hands.
Thank you. So I now call Matthew Curran.
I do.
Is your full name Matthew Curran?
Liz.
And are you a senior planner at Lanpo Limited in Cromwell?
I am.
Did you prepare a brief of evidence of chief back in February of this year?
I did.
And have you also prepared two supplementary briefs? One in relation to the Falls Dam, dated the 14th of May 2021, and subsequently a second supplementary brief producing a table of deemed permit dams and their accompanying permits. And I think that brief was dated the 24th of May.
That's correct.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to ask you, do you confirm that your primary brief and your first supplementary briefs of evidence are true and correct to the best of your knowledge and belief?
I do.
Right. Now, I want to ask you some questions about your 24 May supplementary evidence. That's the second supplementary evidence. And preface the question by asking if you were in court yesterday afternoon when Commissioner Edmonds was discussing a Fraser permit with Mr. Sheehan, who was in the witness box at that time.
I was.
Now, can you identify in your evidence the Fraser permits that you understood the Commissioner was discussing with Mr. Sheehan?
I believe she was talking about consent number 2001649, which is...
Sorry, you're going to have to lift your voice and slow those digits down.
Sure.
She's talking, Commissioner's talking about...
So it's consent 2001649. That's to dam the Fraser River with a 13-metre high concrete arch dam.
Okay, well, let's just pause for a moment and allow everybody to find that and catch up. And is it the fourth permit in your second appendix that you have in mind?
I may not have them in the same order as you, sorry.
Do you not have your bundle of permits with you?
I don't have the appendix printed off. I've got them printed off individually.
Yep. Again, you need to lift your voice up a bit. Can you just provide that appendix too, I think, to Mr. Curran's brief of evidence, his last brief.
If we look at the table under your paragraph 12, there's under the first permit holder in the left column, there's a list of permits. Are you referring to the second one listed there, 2001.649 water permit, dam water Fraser River?
That's correct, I am.
Now, in your paragraph 12, you explain your understanding that those have been provided by the ORC and appear to relate to the damming activities listed in Table 1. And so if we can go to Table 1, we can see on page 3, the second from the bottom on page 3, Ernst Blue Irrigation Company, damming water Fraser River and with the high classification. Can you see that?
Yep, I can.
So my question for you is, having heard the exchange with Mr. Sheehan yesterday, and having now studied the permits, are you able to say whether the permit 2001.649 in your Appendix 2 does in fact relate to the dam structure in your first table, second line from the bottom on page 3?
No, they're separate dams.
They are separate dams. So can you explain what your knowledge is of that and how those two relate to each other?
So the Fraser Dam, which is the PIC High Dam, 5 kilometres downstream from that dam is another dam called the Fraser Intake Weir. So it's a separate dam from the main Fraser Dam, which we've sort of been talking about in the hearing previously.
All right, so the permit ending 649 is 5K down from the main Fraser Dam, is that right?
That's correct.
And what was it called, Fraser?
Fraser Intake Weir. It's like the, relates to a lower hydro generation activity.
Okay.
To your knowledge, is there any permit that brings in NSOLD guidelines that relates to the high PIC dam from your table on the Fraser from the table 1?
No.
Okay. All right. Now, what I now want to do is to ask you whether you have prepared a summary of your evidence.
I have.
And I hope the court will have it.
I do.
So, Mr. Curran, would you simply read that evidence and answer any questions that there may be?
Sure. My name is Matthew Curran. My qualifications and experience are set out in my evidence in chief, dated 5 February 2021. This summary has been prepared to assist the court with my position in reference to my evidence in chief and supplementary evidence dated 14th of May 2021 and the 25th of May 2021. My evidence in chief and supplementary evidence relates to the application of Plan Change 7 to dams that are authorised by deemed permits. I have not considered the application of Plan Change 7 to the broader suite of deemed permits or permits for the take and use of surface water that expire prior to 31 December 2025. It is my experience that addressing dam safety matters that relate to natural hazards, for example, a dam breach resulting in flooding, requires technical input from dam engineers. Involving technical experts in a resource consent application does not allow for an efficient and timely process-based approach to reconsenting. The matters of control under Rule 10A31 in the version of Plan Change 7 attached to the JWS conferencing 4-6 of May 2021 does not provide scope to consider the interrelationship between dam safety and natural hazards. I consider it necessary to progress applications to dam water under the Regional Plan for Water so the ORC can recognise and provide for natural hazards as a Section 6 matter of national importance. Plan Change 7 captures the damming and associated discharge of water authorised by dam permits. It does not capture the damming and associated discharge of water authorised by water permits.
Just slow it down a bit.
I question why Plan Change 7 applies to dams authorised by dam permits but does not capture water permits to dam water that expire prior to 31st December 2025. Noting that Plan Change 7 captures the take and use of surface water authorised by deemed permits and water permits that expire prior to 31 December 2025.
Can you just pause there a second? I just want to reread that paragraph. It's quite chunky in terms of how much content you've got there. Got a lot of content. continue. And again, just take it really slow because you've got a tremendous amount of content just packed into these paragraphs.
Cool. There are 17 deemed permits that authorised the damming of water and just one deemed permit that authorised the discharge of water associated with the operation of a dam. I have not been able to analyse in detail ORC's resource consent database, but it seems apparent from a brief review of permits to dam water that there are at least as many RMA water permits that authorise the damming of water that expire on the 1st of October 2021 as there are deemed permits that authorise the damming of water. I note that section 413(1) of the Act provides that mining privileges become deemed permits, become deemed water permits, section 14, and discharge permits, section 15. There is no equivalent provision for dam licences issued under the Mining Act to become land use consents for a structure on the bed of a river under section 13 of the Act. Policy 4.4.1 of the Regional Policy Statement relates to the assessment of activities for natural hazard risk and requires consideration of the long-term viability and affordability of measures to avoid, remedy, and mitigate those risks. Plan Change 7 does not allow for this consideration. Deemed permits that provide for the damming of water at Fraser and Falls Dam are relied upon by Pioneer Energy to enable the generation of hydroelectricity. In this respect, the submissions of Trustpower are relevant. The intention of Plan Change 7 is to allow for an efficient and timely transition to a new land and water management regime that gives full effect to the MPS FM 2020. In relation to this purpose, I do not see any practical need to cause a deemed permit to dam water to expire where there seems to be no reason under the MPS FM 2020 to anticipate that the water body is going to need to be drained altogether, which would be the practical effect of not renewing a damming permit. The health and well-being of a water body can be met only insofar as water can continue to be impounded behind the dam structure. In that respect, I agree with the distinction that Plan Change 7 makes between RMA damming and discharge permits on the one hand and the take-and-use permits on the other. I consider that the same distinction should be made in the deemed permit context. Plan Change 7 fails to provide a regulatory framework through which the damming of water can be effectively managed. In my opinion, damming and associated discharge activities should be carved out of Plan Change 7 by way of amending the Plan Change 7 objective and policy framework to exclude the damming and associated discharge of water.
Mr. Curran, just to be clear then, is the carve-out provisions that you are now suggesting for the court set out in your first supplementary brief of evidence that was dated the 21st of May?
Correct, but I believe there were additions to made.
There
is additions to those amendments made in a memorandum filed by yourself and Mr. Moore, I believe.
Well, but if you got your
when speaking, and I know the temptation is to look at your lawyer, and mostly that's okay, but
yeah.
Actually the bench is having difficulty picking up your
jurisdiction.
So could you try and look at us? That would actually, and then we can actually have a look at you whilst you're talking. It will help us.
Struggling.
Difficulties at
yeah,
the
sure.
Moment.
Thanks.
So what you are now suggesting is your relief was what was appended to the joint memorandum of counsel filed, I think, on Friday.
Correct.
Thank you.
A memo on Friday. Yeah, I think I've seen it, but I haven't particularly picked up on relief. Yeah. not sure I've seen your issues, but I haven't. I don't think I've picked up on your relief. Or don't have a copy of the relief. So is this a combined position between yourself and the Regional Council? Or is this the relief you're pursuing for ORUG?
It's the relief that we're pursuing for ORUG.
Oh, right.
The Regional Council doesn't agree with it.
I was thinking, oh, that's a dramatic turn.
I'm never hopeful, ma'am.
No, that's okay. My apologies. I had the issues, yeah. But I just didn't have the appendix to the issues, so I haven't seen where the major changes are. But they're noted up in blue. Am I right in thinking that?
That's correct.
Okay.
And so in Mr. Curran's original evidence, he included tracked provisions, and what you now have in that memorandum simply has the addition of the words and associated discharge.
Because so that's the new part.
Yes. So Mr. Curran had promoted a carve out for damming, and he's now, to be consistent, as he's just explained, with the way that YRMA consents work. Seeking also to add the associated discharge.
Yeah. Okay.
That.
No. All good. Thank you.
I have nothing further, Mark. Right.
Mr. Moore.
Thank you, Your Honour. Good morning, Mr. Curran.
Good morning.
I'd like to start, if I may, with your evidence in chief. I'm looking at your paragraph 17. And in your paragraph 17, you are providing an opinion in relation to the effect of short-term water permits in relation to what you describe as them failing to provide the necessary certainty and security regarding the ability of dam water in the future to enable dam owners to invest in dam infrastructure, limiting maintenance work and preventing upgrades. And that's a statement that is made throughout your evidence. And I want to understand from you what evidence you are relying upon when you make that fairly broad statement.
It would be my involvement in the forced dam application. And drawing on Mr. Sheenan's evidence as well. Relying on the Falls Dam application that I was an author of, and Mr. Sheenan's evidence.
Right, I want to deal with the second of those answers first, and that relates to your involvement in the Falls Dam application. And you go on to discuss that application in paragraph 18 of your evidence. And in particular, you note that the application to replace the Falls Dam deemed permit, the applicant provided reports regarding dam safety and hydrological and ecological modelling. Now, when you think about those reports are not before the court in this proceeding, are they?
No.
And no witness has given direct evidence in relation to the hydrological or ecological modelling with respect to Falls Dam?
Not that I'm aware of.
And when you think about your statement about detailed reports regarding dam safety for Falls Dam, there's no evidence before this court in relation to that information, is there?
I don't believe so.
Now, the second answer that you gave to the question in terms of the factual underpinning of your broad statement in paragraph 16 referred to the evidence given by Mr. Sheehan. Now, were you in court when Mr. Sheehan gave his evidence both yesterday and, I'm going to say, last week or early this week?
I was there both times, yeah.
And having read Mr. Sheehan's evidence and listened to his answers, he did not give any direct detail and information in relation to the maintenance work that is required in relation to the dams that he is supervising?
Can you repeat that statement? He didn't give any evidence in relation to what, sorry?
Any detailed evidence in relation to the maintenance required for those structures that he oversees?
I guess it depends on what detailed evidence. He didn't provide any specific reports in relation to dam structures that he's maintains.
So no specific costings given?
I think he referenced some costings in relation to Ross Creek, but that's all I recall.
And no detailed breakdown of the types of work that would be required?
Again, he gave some examples of some maintenance works that have been undertaken in relation to dams that I believe he referenced were expensive, you know, required a significant investment from the dam owner, but...
And those investments were made by the dam owners at the time?
I can't provide evidence on that. I'd imagine so.
Well, the work appears to have been done based on the photographs Mr. Sheehan provided.
Correct.
And so when we circle back to this broad statement that you give in your evidence about the need for long-term permits to enable dam owners to invest in dam infrastructure, we don't actually have any direct factual evidence about that before this court, do we?
I guess not direct factual evidence, but Mr. Sheehan did say that over the life of Plan Change 7, there would be significant costs associated with maintaining dams.
Well, there was a very broad statement in the concluding paragraph of Mr. Sheehan's supplementary evidence.
That's what I'm referring to.
But that was the level of detail that we have.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Now, you go on in your paragraph 19 to refer to Falls Dam again, a statement about ongoing maintenance requirements on which we have no evidence. And you then go on to note over the page that the owner of Falls Dam must now balance their health and safety obligations with the limited scope they have to invest in the maintenance of the dam. Now, there's been no evidence given by the Falls Dam Company in relation to its health and safety obligations?
No.
And so there's no factual evidence before this court on which you have based that statement?
That statement's just based on my experience in dealings with the Falls Dam application. I haven't provided any specific reports in relation to it.
Just, I think I heard there it's relying on your experience, but there are no reports written in relation to those obligations?
That's incorrect. There are reports, but they haven't been submitted to the court.
And do those reports refer to the need to balance health and safety obligations?
I don't know if they refer to the need to balance it, but they refer to their health and safety obligations or their obligations as a dam owner.
Isn't it right that those obligations exist irrespective of the duration of a consent? A dam owner can't just choose to opt out of its health and safety obligations.
I think that would be a fair statement.
Sorry.
I believe so, yes.
put the question again, yeah.
The owner of a dam cannot simply opt out of its health and safety obligations irrespective of the duration of consents granted.
Correct.
want to move on to your paragraph 24 now. And in this paragraph, you express an opinion in relation to dams or a number of dams in Otago where the damming of water authorised by deemed permits provides for the long-term sustainable management of the environment. Now, which dams do you have in mind when you have given this statement in your evidence?
Falls Dam.
So when you think about Falls Dam and you think about the deemed permits relating to Falls Dams, a Falls Dam, which of those permits specifically do you have in mind?
The deemed permit to dam water.
Now that deemed permit, does that deemed permit have a residual flow requirement on it?
No, it does not.
So when you think about that permit, that permit's not doing anything in terms of maintaining environmental flows downstream of the dam?
No.
In fact, that permit in isolation might harvest all water entering the dam at any given point in time.
That's correct, that in isolation.
So then when you're thinking about that permit and what it enables, it simply doesn't enable the long-term sustainable management of the environment, does it?
That permit specifically, it does not. But the way in which the Falls Dam operates, or is operated, I believe, does provide for downstream flows.
But those flows are voluntary, aren't they?
When viewed in isolation with the deemed permit, they are voluntary. Yes.
And in fact, water is released for the benefit of abstractors downstream to meet obligations under the Falls Dam Agreement. That would be the purpose of the release of flows.
And to maintain ecological flows as well. But the dam is primarily an irrigation dam.
Now you go on in your paragraph 24 in your final sentence to say that granting short-term consents for the damming of water does not provide for the long-term sustainable management of the dam structures. Now, when you think about the dam structures themselves, the dam structures are not authorised by the deemed permits, are they?
No.
In fact, the dam structures are a permitted activity under the Regional Plan for Water?
That's correct. Their maintenance is linked to the ability of the dam owner to finance those maintenance works, though.
So when you think about the dam structures themselves and you think about the authorisation or the permitted activity with respect to those structures, there is an obligation to maintain those structures in good repair?
That's one of the clauses of the permitted activity rule.
And you have helpfully set out...
I'll just repeat that because I've got to... Your Honour, that's one of the clauses of the permitted activity rule, is to maintain a structure in good working repair.
You could be speaking too close to the mic.
Is that better?
Relax a little in the court and sit back. Yeah, we'll see how that goes. Okay.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Okay, I think you're moving into your latest brief. Paragraph 7 is where the rules set out.
Yes, you have helpfully set out the rule at paragraph 7 of your supplementary evidence of 24 May, and there, subparagraph D of rule 13.1.1 requires that the structure is maintained in good repair. And so the obligation in relation to the maintenance of the structure exists through the lens of the permitted activity rule, doesn't it?
It does, yeah.
Now, you noted in an answer just given that the maintenance required of dams or the maintenance input is to be funded, and it's more the link to funding that you had in mind perhaps when you think about the need for a longer term permit. Now, have I understood that answer correctly? I haven't summarised it particularly well, I'm sorry.
I understand what you're saying.
When you think about the certainty that those investing in a dam might require, doesn't that certainty arise through access of water for irrigation use for a longer period of time, as opposed to simply the right to dam water?
I think it's obviously a pretty complex situation in which dam owners are relying on irrigators below the dam who take the water to be able to contribute to the maintenance costs of a dam. So I think that's correct in a sense, but a longer-term permit to dam the water would provide scope for the dam owner to approach irrigators with some confidence that water can be dammed into the future.
But wouldn't that, in terms of seeking to secure investments from farmers, wouldn't the first question be from those farmers, or does that secure our long-term right to take and use the water for irrigation?
I'm not a farmer. I'm not sure I can speak for what questions they'd ask, but I'd imagine that would be a consideration for them.
So when you're giving evidence in relation to the effect of short-term consents and the need for funding, what evidence are you relying on?
Can you repeat that question, please?
What evidence are you relying on in relation to the statements in your evidence that short-term consents are unbankable?
It'd be my experience in determining what appropriate consent term is for the falls dam, and Hayden Craw's evidence, who gave evidence before Mr. Shannon.
Sorry, Hayden?
Craw.
Craw, spell.
Sorry, I can't say that. I can't confirm the spelling of his name.
Mr. Craw, C-R-A-W.
He gave evidence on the economics of farming.
Oh, right, yeah.
I don't recall Mr. Craw's evidence referring specifically to the funding requirements for maintenance of dams.
It was more generally in relation to farming.
And insofar as that evidence was general in relation to farming, it was in relation to the need for security for water for irrigation, wasn't it?
I don't recall.
You move on in your paragraph 26 to discuss the damming of water at a number of large dams in Otago being relied upon for the generation of hydroelectricity. Now, which dams do you have in mind in that regard?
Fraser and Falls.
And is there any evidence before this court in relation to the hydroelectricity generation assets associated with those two structures?
Reference to those dams and their significance for hydroelectricity is included in my evidence.
And what factual evidence are you relying on to make that statement?
The existence of powerhouse structures that are constructed to generate hydroelectricity and related to those dams.
And when you think about the assets held by Pioneer Energy, Pioneer Energy hasn't provided any evidence before this court?
I believe they're a member of ORUG, but...
But no direct evidence on its behalf given, or no representatives from Pioneer have produced evidence?
Not that I'm aware of.
And therefore no evidence given in relation to the effect of a six-year permit in relation to those generating activities?
Correct.
Now we move on now to your assessment in relation to the superior planning documents, and you start with the National Policy Statement for Freshwater. At your paragraph 27, you state that it's your opinion that an interim planning framework, or that you do not consider an interim planning framework to be an appropriate mechanism to manage the effects of damming water while longer-term management regime is drafted to give effect to the NPSFM. And then you immediately go on to say that resource consent applications to dam water must give effect to the planning framework and all higher order planning documents, including the NPSFW. So are you relying on a resource consent process which will achieve the same outcome in terms of, in your words, giving effect to those superior documents?
I'm getting sidetracked because I meant to put a correction in there because I believe it's have regard or give regard to those higher order planning documents. So, in light of that, can you repeat the question?
It's going to be a slightly different question now. So, when you were thinking about your reasoning when you wrote your paragraph 27, you had it in mind that the obligation to give effect to superior documents was the same in relation to planning documents such as PC7 and also resource consent applications. You have correctly identified now, though, that the test in relation to resource consent applications is different and the test is have regard to.
That's correct.
And that's a different test, isn't it?
That's right.
And when you think about the obligation or the test to have regard to something, it requires genuine thought and consideration, but having given it such thought and consideration, it doesn't then need to be given effect to it, can be set aside, can't it?
Correct.
And so when you think about the risks of leaving the giving effect to of the NPSFW and resource consent applications, there is indeed a risk that it might not happen.
Yeah, there's a difference in giving effect and giving regard to.
Move on to your paragraph 29 now. And in that paragraph, your concluding sentence, and it's a reasonably long sentence there, you note towards the end of that sentence that adopting Plan Change 7 as proposed would create a regulatory framework that prevents the NPSFW from being fully implemented through the resource consent process. How?
My thinking there was if you could give, if you could meet the first two tiers of the objective and you're able to get to the third tier, then you then wouldn't be able to meet that third tier under a short-term consent.
Sorry, just say it again. If you fully meet the first two tiers, then you could also meet the third under a short-term consent, or you could not?
You couldn't.
You couldn't. So just let me think about that, though.
When you're referring to the first two tiers?
Objective one is giving priority to the health and well-being of the water
body.
Oh,
the te mana, te wā, priorities, thank
you. Objectives, yeah, sorry.
Yes.
Now, I'm not sure that I'm following yet your reasoning here. So you've said that you'd give effect to the first two orders of priority in the hierarchy of obligations before the third. And how's that relevant to Plan Change 7 precluding that from happening?
Because Plan Change 7 would impose or could impose a short-term consent, and that would not allow you to or could prevent you from being able to maintain a dam structure, and then that in turn would limit your ability to meet your economic, social well-being.
So your concern is about the third order priority not being able to be achieved through a short duration consent?
That's correct.
When you think about the National Policy Statement for Freshwater Management and you think about the first priority, there is significant work required to understand what the health and needs of a water body are.
Correct, yeah. I understand we've come a long way through this process. And, you know.
So are you now less concerned with the risk that Plan Change 7 poses with respect to creating a regulatory framework preventing the NPSFW being fully implemented through resource consents?
Yeah, I understand that it's not Plan Change 7's intention to fully give effect to the NPS 2020.
You understand that Plan Change 7 is seeking to put in place an interim framework to allow the NPSFW to be given full effect through a new land and water plan.
I understand that's the intention, yeah.
And it seeks to do that by not granting water permits for long durations, which might compromise that outcome.
Correct, yeah. I'd point out that the consequences of not allowing a water permit to take water versus not allowing a water permit to dam water are quite different in terms of their effect on the environment.
Accept that damming water can have significant effects on a flow and allocation regime of a river or stream below the dam structure?
I accept that, and in my evidence, I'm proposing that that's addressed by way of section 128. So I recognise that a dam does impact the flow of a river, and that come the adoption of proposal of a new land and water map framework, that may require permits to dam water to be revisited.
So in a sense, you're hanging your hat on the ability of the council to review permits once a new land and water plan is created, to bring permits into line with the flow and allocation regime set out in the new plan.
Correct. Noting that, you know, the number of damming of dam permits that authorised the damming of water compared to the number of dam permits that authorised the taken use, it's a greater picture. So, you know, in terms of the onus that is placed on the council to revisit those permits, I don't believe it compares to what's been discussed previously in terms of the costs associated with reviewing those permits for water takes.
When you think about the potential level of change that might be required with respect to flow and allocation regimes, and let's stay in the Matahitakia catchment with respect to Falls Dam, there could be significant changes to that flow and allocation regime as a result of the new plan?
There could be, yeah. It's possible.
And when you think then about investment certainty, doesn't the risk arise in relation to the consequences of that plan and what it might do, as opposed to what Plan Change 7 is seeking to do through short-term permits?
Could you repeat that question? Are you suggesting that there's a similar risk associated with Section 128 as a short-term permit?
Well, in fact, the risk's probably greater. Well, do you accept the risk's greater in relation to relying on Section 128? Because the investment by that point of time in terms of an upgrade may already have been made.
Section 128, presumably, I'm assuming that a consent would be granted for a longer term than would otherwise be provided for under Plan Change 7. So a dam owner would have the certainty that they are able to dam water in some form for a longer term, as opposed to a six-year term consent where they're facing the possibility that they could be required to discontinue damming. So that would allow them to, with a longer-term consent, respond to changes in the system.
When you asked the question about upgrade, were you thinking upgrade in terms of maintenance of the dam structure, or were you thinking about the downstream farming systems, or both?
Well, neither.
Neither? Okay, right.
So that, yes, perhaps I should put that a little differently. When I used the word upgrade, I had in mind increasing the storage capacity, so upgrading the storage capacity within, for example, Falls Dam, and the investment that would be required for that upgrade.
I can't speak for the dam owner, but I mean, the costs associated with upgrading the dam or raising it would likely be something that the dam owner would look at further down the line.
So just again for context, is it proposed by the owners of Fall Dam to increase storage capacity?
It's not proposed at this stage, but okay. It has been talked about for
a long time. I know that from the media discussions, but that's not part of the application before the Regional Council.
No, it's not.
Okay.
So when you think about the application currently before the council, the long term, well, what's the duration sought?
35 years.
And in order for the system changes, and by that I mean on farm system changes that are proposed, a longer term permit is being sought.
Can you repeat the question?
The 35-year term being sought is to provide certainty of access to the water resource to facilitate or to enable on-farm system change.
I probably can't comment in relation to on-farm system change. The scope of my involvement in that Falls Dam application was related to Falls Dam in itself, not downstream activities.
So, understanding then your involvement, Are you involved with the full suite of permits required, or simply the permit to dam water? What is your level of involvement?
I drafted the application to dam, to renew the dam permit to dam water. There is an existing discharge permit to discharge water from Falls Dam, but under the current water plan, it's permitted activity to discharge water from a consented dam, so we're not proposing to renew that resource consent. It's not a deemed permit.
Okay, thank you.
When you think about the suite of consents required for the operation of Falls Dam, which of those permits or potentially permitted activities controls the downstream flow regime in the Manahitakia River?
It's proposed that a residual flow would attach to the damming permit. The discharge would be permitted.
And so it would be the residual flow on the damming permit that is controlling the flow and allocation regime for the Manahitakia River downstream of the dam?
Correct.
And the effect then of granting a long-term permit for the dam will then set in place the flow and allocation regime downstream of the dam in the Manahitakia River.
Set in place, it will set in place a residual flow until such time that it's reviewed by council, if that is seen to be an appropriate course of action.
And so if you think about the Regional Council and the work it needs to undertake to establish a flow and allocation regime in the Manahitakia River necessary to give effect to the NPSFW, the only way it could then bring that flow and allocation regime into play would be to review the dam permit.
I believe so, yes.
I want to move on now to the NPS REG, the Renewables NPS, and you've provided some evidence about that in your evidence in chief. You note in your paragraph 30 that the objective of that NPS specifically provides for the development, operation, maintenance and upgrading of new and existing renewable electricity generation activities. Now, that's a paraphrase of that objective, isn't it?
I've got quotation marks in there, so I assume I've quoted from it.
What's missing at the front end of your quotation is that the objective refers to recognising the significance.
In front of me to recognise the national significance of renewable electricity generation activities.
So that's a slightly different emphasis from the emphasis that you've drawn, isn't it? your paragraph 33, you go on to say that PC7 has significant implications for the development, operation, maintenance and upgrading of new and existing dam structures used to generate renewable electricity. What evidence are you relying on in relation to new structures in this context?
I'm referring to existing structures being false dam and Fraser, so.
So we should delete reference to new paragraph 33.
I haven't provided specific evidence in relation to the development of new structures.
And when you think about the structure of the NPSREG, the objective is given colour through the policies that then follow.
Yep.
And those policies, particularly policy B, refers to maintaining generation output of existing structures. But you haven't, in your evidence, addressed or assessed the policies within that document, have you?
I've referenced policy E2.
You haven't assessed policies A, B, C, which provide the colour in terms of the maintenance, developing, upgrading, as referred to in the objective?
I haven't referred to those policies in my evidence, no.
You then go on to consider some policies and objectives in the regional policy statement. And you've drawn attention in your summary statement this morning to policy 414, so paragraph C, which is the long-term viability and affordability of those measures. Those measures being relating to activities or assessing activities for natural hazard risk. When you think about the dam structures themselves, though, the current planning framework permits those structures subject to maintaining them in good repair, doesn't it?
It does. Important to note in that context that policy I'd suggest provides for some consideration of how the ability for dam owners to maintain their structures in the context of the affordability of those measures and their ability to undertake those works.
Policy says nothing about duration of consents, though, does it?
Not specifically, it doesn't refer to duration of consents, but that I'd suggest that that's a consideration in determining the ability for a dam owner to maintain their structures in the context of affordability.
So is it your evidence that Paul's Dam and Fraser Dam will only maintain their dam structures if it is affordable and that there is no other requirement in terms of directives duties and obligations or under the Health and Safety Act or under any other legislation to maintain a dam?
That's not my evidence. I'm just saying it's a consideration to determine the affordability of measures to works to maintain a dam as a consideration in determining and when considering natural hazards in relation to dam structures. I'm not saying that dam owners can do away with their obligations in lieu of short-term consents or their ability to finance those works. Those obligations still exist regardless.
Both civilly and criminally, correct?
You're probably... I'm not familiar with the civil and criminal acts that would impose requirements on them, but I understand that there are obligations on dam owners to manage their dams in a safe manner.
So when you think about the answer you've just given, the obligations to maintain these dam structures exist irrespective of the duration given in relation to any consent?
I believe so, yes.
Now, I want to move on to the part of your evidence where you're dealing with various of the objectives and policies in Plan Change 7, and I appreciate that these have moved on somewhat from when you prepared your evidence. The first question I had relates to your paragraph 42. And there you note that it appears that objective 10A1.1, unlike PC7 policies, does not have priority over other objectives in the RPW, which suggests it should be read alongside other objectives. Is that your understanding about how Plan Change 7 operates in the context of consideration of the objective or objectives within it?
I believe there's been some additional text inserted in Plan Change 7 that addresses that paragraph.
And so it's your understanding now that the provisions within Plan Change 7 are intended to be a standalone code with respect to the activities addressed within it, except for the duration for new permits?
That's correct.
Moving on to your paragraph 52, you've referred to some exceptions provided in B, C and E of policy 10A21 not readily applying to dam and therefore consequently not being able to comply with, the outcome of which you say might result in a consent being declined. Now, is that still your view in relation to the changes that have been recommended by the planners as this hearing has evolved?
No, I believe that issue has been resolved by note 2.
Paragraph 82 of your evidence, you provide the matters of discretion which would be relevant on reconsenting a dam under the existing operative plan.
So which packet?
82. Looking at that list, it doesn't refer to cultural values?
Not directly, no.
Doesn't refer to the ecological health and well-being of downstream water bodies?
Again, not directly, no, but I believe it refers to minimum flows and residual flows, which would be a direct way to provide for those values.
And when you think about the flow regime that will be necessary to give effect to the new NPSFM, those flow regimes with minimum flows have not yet been established, have they?
No.
I want to move on to your supplementary statement of evidence dated 14 May. And in this statement of evidence, you put forward an opinion that the lakes created by the impoundment of water are water bodies with respect of the NPSF. MPSFM, and therefore there may be inherent values that need to be protected when establishing values, environmental outcomes, limits, etc. under the NPSFM. Have I understood that that is your evidence?
That's correct. That, for example, the Falls Dam Reservoir is a water body, so to discontinue damming it would be to reduce the habitat that that reservoir provides for.
So, assuming for the point, for present purposes that is correct, and there may well be a legal argument to be had about that, but I'm just interested to tease out what the effect of that or the implications might be. So, staying with Falls Dam and the lake sitting behind it, does that have a name?
It's generally just referred to as Falls Dam, but get the structure and the reservoir confused, so probably be appropriate to refer to the lake behind it as the Falls Dam Reservoir.
The Falls Dam Reservoir. So thinking about the values that might be present in that reservoir, in order to give effect to the NPSFM, the council will need to first understand what those values are.
Yeah, that would be a sensible step to take, sure.
And then in terms of understanding what environmental outcomes are sought, would need to be considered.
Correct.
And as part of that exercise, limits on resource use would need to be developed and established.
Limits on resource use, are you referring to a discharge from the dam or?
Well, if you think about the reservoir as a lake, as you suggest it might be, then there would need to be some controls put in place in terms of maintaining the values within that lake, which might relate to, for example, the water levels within the lake.
It's possible, yeah.
And when you think about the permit to dam, it may then subsequently have to comply with those limits in terms of operating levels?
If those controls are set in a new land and water plan, then...
But we don't yet know what those controls might be, do we? And so, in order to provide first for the health and well-being of that water body, there would need to be an understanding of those values, wouldn't there?
Yeah, I mean, there would be, but to discontinue damming would certainly remove all of those values, which is what the practical effect of a six-year consent would be. At the end of that 6 years, if it's not replaced, then the effect of that would be that the lake is, well, the Falls Dam Reservoir would be drained, and then all of the values attached to that water body would be lost.
Might one of the outcomes in the alternative be that a more refined set of operating levels is established with respect to the values within that water body?
That is one possible outcome, but we don't know that at the moment. What we're looking at is the potential for discontinued damming, not potential variation in operational levels.
And when you think about what the Plan Change 7 is seeking to achieve, it's seeking to put in place a short-term regime so that the values identified under the NPSFM can be properly articulated in the regional planning framework.
That's correct, but presumably those values are associated with the water body and they relate to that water body being maintained. So if you're going to drain that water body, then those values are going to disappear.
Thank you. Those are my questions.
Thank you. Ms. Dixon, did you have any questions? All right. Thank you. Any examination?
Yes. I think we need some clarity around the consent structure for Falls Dam before we go too much further. Do you have your first supplementary brief of evidence available to you?
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that you might have the suite of four permits that you produced as...
Sorry, I don't have the appendix attached there.
I wonder if the registrar might be able to find it for me. Right, can you just take a moment to... refamiliarise yourself with those four permits. I'm sure you've seen them 100 times. So just working our way through them. So the first is the is in the suite of four. Do you have 2001.721 discharge to water permit?
Yep.
And that is in the name of Omakau Area Irrigation Company Limited.
Correct.
Is that a deemed permit or an RMA permit?
It's an RMA permit.
Yeah. And the expiry date?
1st of October 2021.
Okay. And is there a residual flow in relation to this discharge permit?
No, there's not.
Okay. So then, if we move to the second one, which is in the suite 2001.701. Is this a deemed permit or an RMA permit?
That's a deemed permit.
I see. And we know what the expiry date of deemed permits are, so I won't ask you about that. The third permit in the suite is consent number 98305, issued to Falls Dam Company Limited. And what's that for?
That's for the take and use of water to generate hydroelectricity.
And do you see in condition one a residual flow requirement?
I do.
And that expires when?
30th of September 2033.
And to your knowledge, does this permit Is this permit subject to Plan Change 7?
No.
And lastly in the suite is consent 98306. And again, can you identify, is this an RMA permit or a deemed permit?
It's an RMA permit.
And can you, what's it for?
It's for the discharge of water from the powerhouse.
And again, is there a discharge, is there a residual flow condition on this permit?
No. Oh, sorry. There is, yeah.
Right. And it expires when?
30th September 2033.
And again, for completeness, is this permit subject to Plan Change 7?
No.
So what is the mechanism available to the Regional Council to amend the discharge regime under these last two permits?
Section 128.
Right. And my friend suggested to you, I think if I picked him up correctly, that Falls Dam controls the hydrological pattern in the Manuherikia River. Are there other dams that have an influence on the Manuherikia catchment flow regime?
There are, yes.
And if we start in the Ida Valley, are the two main dams in the Ida Valley, Pullburn and Upper Manaburn?
Correct.
And do you know whether those are deemed permit dams or RMA dams?
They're RMA dams.
Right. And below Falls Dam, is there a weir where the Omakau Irrigation Company takes its water?
I believe so. Yeah. There's a number of
weirs. Are you not familiar with that?
Can you give me the name of the...
Well, are you familiar with the main stem take location for the Omakau Irrigation Company?
Yes.
And is that just upstream from Bex?
Yes, I believe so.
Perhaps we can ask a little bit more open questions rather than leading. And where might that intake structure be as opposed to, is it upstream? So just watch your questions.
Thank you, ma'am. Are you familiar with what the permit is for the Omakau intake? Is it deemed or RMA?
No, I don't know, sorry.
Okay, all right, I won't ask questions about that. And... if we move further downstream, we've got the Lower Manaburn Dam. Are you familiar with that?
I know, he's at it again. You just all open questions, as opposed to when we move further. That's a closed question. You're asking a yes or no answer. It sounds like cross-examination, but he's your witness.
Yes, I'm just trying to be efficient because I don't think there's any dispute about
it. I know, but I think, there's a question how, Mr. Curran's been really clear. He's responsible for reconsenting something in relation to the Falls Dam.
Yes.
I'm not sure how familiar he is with the, with the suite of permits which pertain to the Manuherikia catchment. That's not been established that he is familiar, so you need to go carefully.
All right.
Yeah.
Do you know what the permit regime is for the Lower Manaburn Dam?
There's a deemed permit that authorises the Lower Manaburn Dam and a deemed permit to take water from that dam.
Okay. So, is it fair, as I think my friend put to you, that it's Falls Dam that contrives the whole hydrological pattern in the Manuherikia River?
I'd say it's a complex system with a number of inputs. So yeah. Falls Dam obviously has an influence on it, but there's a number of other contributing factors going on.
Yeah. And if the Regional Council was minded to introduce a flow regime for the whole of the Manuherikia catchment. Given the pattern that you've identified of RMA permits and deemed permits, what's the mechanism after the 1st of October 2021 available to the Regional Council to implement a flow regime?
For on RMA permits that have been granted?
Yes.
Section 128.
Thank you. Would you see merit in the flow regimes from, or the residual flow regimes from all of the dams being reviewed at the same time?
Yeah, I think there's merit in that approach.
Can you explain why?
Because of the complexity associated with the system.
Sorry, try and face it. Know the temptations to look at your lawyer, and I get that, but you actually have to be facing this because we're just simply not picking up.
Yep, because of the complexity of the system, just altering the flow that's coming out of the falls dam probably wouldn't be adequate to give effect to a new land and water plan. Mm-hmm. So it could require a review of a number of different permits.
Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you. All right. And then just to round off that last question, under the region's approach, if those dams within the Manuherikia catchment that it proposes be granted short-term consents together with RMA dams as may, which do not expire within the expected lifetime of this plan change, under the region's approach for a share, a flow, an allocation, a flow regime, it would be a combination of both reconsenting and review.
It could be, yeah.
Yeah. And under your council's approach, it would just simply be review. So those are the two options.
Correct.
Yeah. Right, well, I have no questions. Do you have any questions? Do you want 5 minutes?
I do.
You do?
Well, it was just, I thought we might have morning tea about now.
I think we're going to take
I
morning
can start,
tea.
But
No. We'll have morning tea and then get back to you. So Mr. Page will probably buy you a cup of coffee. But anyway, 15 minutes. Thank you. All rise.